Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am your host, Fat Thor. And today I am joined by a very, very special guest, a friend of the show, someone that we've been wanting to have on for a good long while now. You may know him as the editor of such books as Magnus for Wisecracker, Prolong, among some other titles. But we're here to talk about, he's also the writer and editor of Magni the Mighty, a book all about the Sons of Thor in post-Ragnarok, which is everyone out there listening and watching knows is right up my alley. We welcome Devin R. Scott. Devin, thank you so much for coming and nerding out with me today. I am so excited to have you on.
And it's a pleasure to be here. You know, I am a big fan of the show, and obviously we're friends outside of this. But it's just such an honor to actually, you know, be on and be able to speak about, you know, Magni and just Thor in general, because I love Thor. Thor is my boy.
Let's go. So
any conversations I can, you know, muster on Thor's behalf, I'm cool with it.
Hell yeah. And you're a man after my own heart saying you're a fan of the show and everything. I can't thank you enough for that. And just a little, little backstory for everyone listening and watching at home. Me and Devin have followed each other for a very long time. Devin has been rocking with me since day one, since like basically I started the whole comic Twitter kind of thing. Always been very supportive of the show. I've always tried to be as supportive of his work as I can. So again, it's just, this has been a long time coming and I'm super excited to get into all this. But before we get into Magni and kind of the meat of the episode and what we're here to talk about, I want to take a step back a little bit. And something we usually do on the show is talk about your kind of comic origin story, if you would. And yours, I thought, was very interesting and something that I think, a lot of people don't really get in growing up with comics in the sense of your father was actually a comic book collector and your brother's into comics. You said that you started reading comics when you were around like 4 years old, and it's just been a lifelong love, and like going to the local comic shop was a family affair. So I thought that was just so awesome. And I think, you know, for a lot of kids, it's like, parents are, you know, supportive, but not necessarily into it with them. So I'm curious, just like, what was your pops collecting? And can you remember kind of the major either character or maybe it was like a storyline that really grabbed you early on?
Yeah. So, you know, my father is like into pretty much anything he can get his hands on as long as it was Marvel. So, you know, he's a big Luke Cage collector. He's my polar opposite when it comes to teams. So I collect the Avengers. He collects all of the X-Men. Like, he's had almost every X-Men title that's released ever.
Good guy.
But, you know, he's a big, you know, reader. So his collection was pretty deep growing up. Like, I'm talking, like, stacked to the ceiling comic books. And, you know, we go to the shop every week, you know, every Wednesday after school, typically, if he had time before work. And, you know, we'd get our own books. Sometimes when we couldn't go, he would just bring us back stuff and say, here, y'all figure out what y'all like. And, you know, I'll, you know, keep getting it for you until, you know, we could go to the shop on our own and pick out books or whatever. So I think personally for me, though, what really stood out for me to read was Daredevil. More specifically, Frank Miller's Daredevil, because my father was not, I don't know, he wasn't really too big into Daredevil. Like, he bought the books when he was younger, but it's like, he didn't really care. So he was like, right here, whoever likes them the most can have them. So I took them. So, you know, I read that stuff and it was great. You know, it was very solid reading. I think I had like, from Miller's Daredevil all the way through that weird era of Daredevil before the relaunch, where it was like the Tree of Life. He had the black armor, black and red armor. It was crazy because at first, you know, I was like, what is this? I don't really care for it. And then, you know, I get older and I'm just like, I really want to go back and buy those issues. So I got a grocery list of books, unfortunately.
Oh, you and me both, man. The list never ends. The list never ends.
No.
It just gets
longer. I'm adding to it. Yeah, I literally just went to the store yesterday. I was bored and told my son, hey, we're going to Ollie's over here. So, you know, little store, whatever. They usually buy stuff from other stores in bulk. I was like, all right, whatever. I walk in there, and I went to the one back home in Toledo, Ohio, where I'm from originally. And I'm like, all right, well, I came looking for action figures. I left with, like, two hard covers. I think it was, like, Justice League Rebirth and Damian, Son of Batman, or so, no, Robin, Son of Batman, what it was. But they only had a hardcover too, so I'm like, whatever, I'll find another one. It don't matter. So I'm going to read those a little bit later tonight if, you know, time's on my side today.
Yeah, I'm just like you, man. I cannot be trusted going into any sort of comic book shop, bookstore, anything like that. I even with my local comic shop, like I have my pulls, more extensive pull list than I should have in the first place. And then I walk in there and I'm like, I'm just getting the pulls. I just go to the counter, don't even look. And every single time I get at least one thing, Like I cannot help myself. And
see,
most of the time, it's not just one thing.
You're a stronger man than I, because I say, all right, just the pull, or maybe just one extra thing. No, I can't just leave with one extra thing. I usually leave with at least like 10 extra things. I did that a week ago, I think. So I got my regular pull, then I just so happened to see something that looked cool on the shelf. I'm like, that looks cool. So I grabbed it. I saw some other stuff, grabbed those. I think I had like a $60 budget or something like that. I spent like well over $100.
Easily. It happens, boom, like that. Especially, I don't know about you. I'm pretty sure you're the same, but I'm a dollar bin guy. Like, I'm always hitting them dollar bins, and it's like, you'll find something, you're like, oh, I cannot pass this up. And it might be a dollar, but then you get five more of those, and then plus your pulls, and then, there's a, you know, variant over there. It's boom, easily. You're stacking up easily. I can totally relate to that.
Oh, most definitely. It's a never ending cycle of a money pit. You know, you walk into the shop with an objective and you fail at it every time you leave. Yeah. You know, dollar bins are my babies. I've finished all sorts of different series through the dollar bins. You know, I think I'm about to finish Ultimate Fantastic Four. I'm like 20 issues away. That's a quick trip. Thor, stuff that I used to have, been buying those. I think I've gotten all the Avengers stuff that was in decent shape that wasn't in the regular back issue section at my LCS, and decided to just start picking out of their dollar bin for other stuff. So there's all sorts of stuff I could find, and whatever I've missed out on that was on the stands, I bought it from the dollar bin. So.
Yeah, I would say everyone watching, listening out there, most people that listen and watched us are obviously super into comics, but if you're not really into comic books and are just kind of getting into it, biggest piece of advice, never, never pass the dollar bin. Never pass up the dollar bin. You never know what kind of treasures you will find in there. And like you're saying, you know, filling in holes in your collection, and it's just never, never pass it up. But I love that Daredevil was one of the big ones that got you into comics, because I've said this, I'm not the only one who said this, but I've always said Daredevil is, for me, one of the most consistently well-written characters at Marvel. So it's no surprise to me that that's one of the characters that really got you into this whole world of comics. And I got a shout out too. I personally love the black armor. Like, people shit on that costume so bad, but I have always, like, ever since I was a little kid, it was like a learn to draw kind of thing, like Marvel characters. And it had like a trace page and all this stuff. And the Daredevil in that book was the armored Daredevil. And like, I just always thought it was so freaking cool. So when I got older and learned like other people didn't like it, I'm like, what do you mean? I love that. I'm curious. So you have this love of comics, nurtured and fostered by the family, and you know grow up loving these stories, and obviously that leads you to try your hand at telling stories yourself. And you've talked about how you wrote a bunch of fan fiction, and you actually even tried your hand at writing some novels when you were younger. So I'm curious, can you remember what some of those, maybe the fanfics or the novels, what they were kind of about? And on top of that, what were some of the influence, like what was the kind of voice you were trying to achieve with your writing? Like some of the influences you aspired to write like when you were first beginning?
Yeah, totally. So I know right off the top of my head, I remember specifically when I was in high school, I did an EXO Manowar fanfic from Valiant. I just did like a post-apocalyptic something or other with them. And I actually, now that I think about it, I started a liberal arts group is what it was called in a high school with a couple other kids that I was friends with. So when I wasn't, you know, running track and whatever, I'd be there with them and I wrote it because we had a bunch of different things we wanted to do. And it's like, well, I want to write such and such, you know, just start doing that. And I thought about it. I was like, I could write a novel of this. But then, you know, I think something happened, probably something regarding my depression or whatever. But I'm like, this sucks, even though everybody told me it was good. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of threw it in the pile with the rest of the stuff. But for the majority of the stuff that I wrote, though, you know, I read like a lot of I've read a lot of Star Wars novels and stuff, and like I was really inspired by those to really like try to write on my own, because in conjunction with my comics writing, or wanting to be a comics writer, whatnot, novels were like my primary like source of reading, because it went novels, comics, manga, which honestly, I think I bought as much manga as I did comics, because I had like a 40 book pull list at one point before I had to cut back. And I was, I think I did the math recently. I spent like $1,200 a month, because I get 40 books, not for the month, but like weekly or something crazy like that. Or it was like 20 books baby. Weekly. But yeah, my dad was not happy.
My man is reading.
Oh yeah.
I love it.
But for the most part, I was trying to emulate folks like Dwayne McDuffie early on, because I read a lot of Milestone Static stuff and, you know, just early Milestone material. Man, who are other? Jimmy Palmiotti was a good one from back then, because I was sneaking Punisher Max on the shelf to read and didn't have my dad go buy it for me because they wouldn't let me buy it. Mm-hmm. Man, there are so many people I was trying to emulate at that time. I was like, well, you know, I just wanted to tell fun, you know, unique stories basically early on that everybody, including myself, would really like. But, you know, I struggled worse with my depression back then, and, you know, it's hard to live with. So it's like, well, no, I'm not very good. So I just, you know, eventually I scrapped all that stuff. Like, I burned it in a fire for a bonfire once. Because somebody invited me, hey, I got some books I need to burn. Let's just throw them all in the fire. But eventually, when I did rekindle that love, like, I went and researched, like, all the folks that I really love. So, like I said, Dwayne McDuffie, Jonathan Hickman, more so now, is who's one of my bigger inspirations in terms of, like, trying to find my voice. And that's kind of why I write the way that I do. He does everything in a systemic way, and it makes sense for him. Mm-hmm. I kind of write in a similar way, but, you know, I do far less charts and extra stuff that he does, but I'm starting to, my mind essentially works the way that his does. You know, I've explained it to him at least once on his Substack, actually 2 months ago, I think. And he thought it was crazy that I could write, like, I could do a book a day, technically. Mm-hmm. Some days I do, some days I don't. It's really dependent on me. But I found my voice so much now because I've actually been able to say, hey, I've been writing, you know, since 2019, just doing comic books. I ain't written. I've, you know, barely dabbled in anything else. I just did a manga chapter recently that was, all right, I'm going to fix that up. I tried my hand at a novel back in last December, right before Christmas. It's coming okay. But no voice like comics, and there's just too many like great influences out there that I have to study, one of which is currently writing Thor. So
dude, the Owl Father, man, the Owl Father. I mean, those are just such great influences to, you know, shoot out. I mean, like, yeah, you said, the Owl Father, he's killing it right now in Immortal. Everything he does is great. And yes, Hickman is just like, you want a big event, you call Hickman. Like, if there's one thing my man knows how to do, it's put on a goddamn event. And I mean, again, those are just perfect. And I think those are people that influence everybody. And I also really love how you talked about, you know, you dealt with that bout of depression a little bit early on, and like doubting yourself and everything is something I think everyone can relate to. Everyone goes through those kind of feelings. And I think it's very important to kind of talk about those things. And also, I think it's something I'm glad, obviously, that you were able to get past that, because I feel like, at least for me, that's probably a big reason that a lot of people never start writing or, you know, start, you know, pursuing that kind of dream, and they let that inner voice, you know, win. And I just think it's really awesome, like I said, that you were able to not only get through that, but then have a resurgence of love for the medium and everything, and have it actually push you forward. So I think that's absolutely awesome. And you honestly are leading perfectly into the next thing I wanted to ask you about is, so 2019, I'm going to start writing comics, right? And you talk about how you were researching how to make comics. And I'm curious, when you were starting that and like that whole process was getting going, you were like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, write comics. What did that research kind of look like? Because I think that, you know, a lot of us as comic book nerds were like, I could do that, right? Like, you read a comic and you're like, I could do this. But then you actually sit on your desk or, you know, and start putting pen to page, you realize it's a lot different than just, you know, writing shit onto a page. So I'm curious, how did you approach that kind of a research and like actually, you know, again, putting pen to page?
So, you know, just to start, there were already, you know, a couple things that I was aware of before actually, you know, going through the process of like getting into script. So one of which is, man, I'm about to forget his name too. Drawing a blank. Well, anyway, any other time I remember, it's a, you know, it's a book that can be commonly found at libraries. It's basically how to make comics, and like you could literally look it up, and it's not hard. But there are a lot of online resources people don't understand. Like, there are literal databases for like scripts for like a lot of your favorite writers. I saw Bendis had scripts up. Man, Chris Claremont, I think I've seen some of his old scripts. A lot of people. All you really have to do is, you know, just type it into Google, and it'll come up. Just like, oh, comic script database or whatever. And there's a lot of writers that actually do have their own websites dedicated. Like, shoot, Jim Zub, I think, has a whole website dedicated to learn how to make comics. And that was actually one of the top three that I was using, because I read two books, and then I was on Jim's website for a good amount of time. So every day I'd read a little bit, and then I'd write a little bit. And at the time I was writing on a laptop, you know, and you know, occasionally a notebook, but the notebook method does not work. Like, it's good for just general ideas, but it doesn't help you format stuff, because you need more space than what paper can give you.
Yeah.
So, you know, after basically researching all these different, you know, facets, plus I still own a How to Draw the Marvel Way book, which I pilfered from my father as a kid, and then he just never got back. But it's just looking at all these different resources and then applying it to myself. So I was used to writing like novel stuff. That was how I commonly wrote. I assumed it was easy. Writing comic, it was not. I sat there frustrated every day trying to figure out how to format it, you know, just taking bits and pieces like Frankenstein and a script until I got something that was readable. And man, I spent a whole year doing that. So I can only imagine what some people go through just trying to get started. And I thought it was super easy. I just, you know, write a script, turn it in. I researched publishers. No, not that simple.
Yeah.
You know, publishers have a lot of criteria for what it is that they need in a pitch packet. You know, you got to have your pitch. You got to have, you know, sample pages so they understand what you know about putting a comic book together. You know, you got to have that finished cover, all that stuff. Like, there are very few publishers that I'm aware of today that take anything less than that. And having my own little publishing brand of my own, like, even if I allow submissions or anything like that, like, I have a set criteria. Everyone does. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that really instilled in me a lot of hardship, because I'm just sitting here like, how am I supposed to get anywhere if they have all these barriers? I was like, they gatekeeping this for a reason. What's yeah. going on? So, you know, from 2019 to 2020, because by that time, once the new year started, I was more confident with my writing. You know, I had done it every day. I was only churning out like maybe two pages at most, because it would take me like an hour to sit there, figure out how to script it. And then eventually somebody took a chance on me the summer, well, a week after my birthday, you know, July 4th, baby and all. And they took a chance on me. I wrote my first one shot. It was like 20 pages. I got paid $20 a page. So I made a cool $400. But it took me 3 months to do that book, mm-hmm. because I got so many red lines from my editor, Jason Snyder, who is the reason I am an editor now. He basically was like, you get the concept, but you're not doing everything the right way. Why are you doing it this, that? You fix that. So after 3 months, you know, he was like, all right, this is good. Very good. You're doing a lot better than you did when we first started this. And I'm like, okay. And from there, I was like, all right, well, now I get it. Now I really get it. So yeah. From there, my scripts have been like super tight, and you know, I hand format every script like I always do. So, you know, I start every script the same way. I usually format it to the first four pages and like where the cover would be. So the title card and all that lovely stuff, who's working on it. But it was a lot of work just to even yeah. get to that first like real opportunity point. And now I'm just booming, because it seemed like everybody won a piece. And I'm happy to give it.
Yeah, I mean, it's well deserved, and I think it's just a testament to, you know, who you are and stuff, of you took the time to really learn the craft. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that maybe get ahead of themselves very early yep. on, and just kind of like, I have this idea and like, let's go. And it, you know, like you said, you took the time to really study the craft. How do you put a book together? How do you put a press mm-hmm. kind of thing together for these publishers? And again, I think all of that can be shown in your work. And it, yep. that's why you're, you know, having this kind of boom that you're talking about, is because, like you said, you took the time, learned the craft, and it's all paying off now. And I definitely see that in your work with Magni. And before we get into Magni, because like I said, I'm super excited to talk about this. I have so many questions for you. But I want to ask you really quickly about editing and being an editor. And I think that is just super interesting. And I think an editor is something that, again, a lot of people kind of from the outside looking in don't have much knowledge on, and are little don't really understand what an editor actually does. So I wanted to ask you, for the people watching and listening at home, can you kind of just explain a little bit what an editor actually does for a comic yeah. book? And not only what an editor does, but when you're learning from, excuse me, I forget the name you just said, the
guy, Jason Snyder.
Yep. Jason Snyder, that kind of mentored you a little bit and kind of got you into editing. What were some of the things that you learned that were maybe surprising to you, like what an editor does and like what makes a good and bad editor?
Yeah, definitely. So basically, for those of you watching that don't understand what editors do, and there's editors on everything from movies to, you know, books, editors are the people at the front line that basically ensure that all the ideas that you've written are ready to go for print or, you know, regular people consumption, mainstream consumption. So basically, in the world of comic books, I am the one holding back everything in order to make sure it's properly ready to go before it goes to press and in your hands. So I work with the writer, make sure the script is good. If I'm, you know, typically I am the editor for all my own stuff. So I work with artists, make sure all the artwork is sound and ready to go to the colorist. The colorist does their thing. I make sure colors are proper, move it to the letterer. Letterer does their thing. I make sure everything's cool, make sure there are no, you know, issues with the grammar from what the script was. I make any necessary changes to how, say, like caption boxes or speech bubbles look, and, you know, let them know essentially, hey, this needs fixed before, because we can't just send it out looking like this. This is what, you know, makes certain books unreadable. Mm-hmm. And we basically ensure that you get like the perfect or close to perfect product in your hands before it goes to print, essentially. So, and a lot of people don't understand that editors are not just people that look over like grammar or whatever. We do a lot of stuff. We got to make sure the story flows well, there's good pacing. Does this stuff make sense? Because a lot of people don't realize that in terms of continuity, and I'm a big continuity individual, I hate, you know, little things that people seem to forget, and it's rampant the past decade. but, you know, we ensure that, like, there could be nothing wrong. And there's a lot of people that are just unwilling to pay us because they don't understand that we're just more than grammar, yes. No, we do everything typically to ensure that your project is cool. Even if you don't pay us to, you know, look over the art, the letters, the colors, whatever, but you still want our advice, I suggest you ask us after that initial script review, because I've gotten a lot of people that have sent me their work, and it's like, you could have done better if you had an editor, because that needs work, this needs work, the colors might not be right, and might feel muted after it gets printed or something strange. But no, that's essentially what we do. We are often taken for granted. And basically, what I learned from Jason when we went through that 3-month debacle with my writing early on, I saw that he was very persistent with keeping me on track with, all right, what makes sense, what doesn't. You know, when I say like heavy redlining of my script, like every page had a bunch of red. There was no original, nothing of mine. Like, he was putting things in there and leaving like comments on my scripts, like, hey, maybe you should change this panel to something else. You know, make this inlet so we have more space for, you know, the main artwork. You know, inlet panels are just smaller panels for like something so simple as, if you don't want to show two people exchanging money full body, you just put their hands in the money exchange in it, or whatever. You can change, you can make inlet panels do pretty much whatever, and then show the rest of what you want to show, or whatever. But basically, he was very communicative. He always made sure to elaborate on his thoughts for what was wrong with my stuff. A lot of editors, I don't want to bash nobody, but I've seen in a lot of books that do have editors, they still miss like crucial stuff. And then I still don't understand how a lot of these things get past people, especially in the mainstream. And that's where I see a lot of these problems. And it just makes me sad, because I've read at least a couple books in the past couple months where I just don't understand what's going on with editorial. Y'all not paying these people, which we are often underpaid.
Yeah.
But no, bad editors usually don't do any of the aforementioned stuff. They don't really talk to you. They just kind of tell you this, that, and the other, and then go about their business. They're not very good at correcting anything in your script, like grammar. I've worked with editors, or at least a couple editors that have worked with bigger companies. And my last one that I worked with basically gave me like the highest praise on my next project. So it's just like, oh, okay, to hear this from somebody that's worked for some of these bigger companies.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what ones, but it was something to really just feel pride in, because it shows that my hard work has, you know, paid off a lot. And I, like I said, I've been working tirelessly for, you know, since 2019. It's about to be 2024, and I'm still at it hard too.
Yep. And like I said, I mean, you can see it's all paying off. And I just love, I think it's so interesting hearing about, like, just the kind of background that goes into all these comic books and stuff. And I never cease to find it so fascinating, like the way that you guys structure a book and like what goes into that. And it's like, I think, again, a lot of people don't realize, you know, you get a book, you open the comic and you're like, oh, there's cool pictures, you know, and the, you know, the words are here, but you don't understand, like, someone took the time, like, there's a reason that that word bubble is where it is. And there's a reason that this panel is here and this panel's here. And like the art looks this way as opposed to this way. Like, it's just so much that goes into it. And I think, like you said, as along with the pay, I think it also translates to just general acknowledgement sometimes as well of, like you said, what all goes into making this comic book. And I think it's also a testament to something that we talk about all the time of the collaborative effort it takes to make a comic book. It's like, yeah, you have a great idea, or you're a really great artist, or, you know, whatever it may be, but it takes a team of people to really bring these things to life, at least the great ones, for sure.
Exactly.
So, like I said, I love hearing about the kind of more nitty-gritty details that go into it, especially on the editing side. I think that's super interesting. I have more questions for you about all the nitty-gritty stuff, but unfortunately, we got to move on because we got to talk about Magni. I want to make sure we have enough time for Magni. Yeah. So you get into editing, you start editing, you're writing books, and this all comes to Magni the Mighty. And so I was lucky enough to read the first two issues. Thank you so much for sending those our way.
You're welcome.
And I told you this before we started recording. I loved these books, man. I really did. And I'm not just saying that because you're sitting in front of me. Everyone we talk about, everyone knows I'm the Thor guy. And I love, you know, not only Thor, but just the world of Asgard, Norse mythology, all of that stuff. And this all comes to play in this series that you got going on. So the story follows Magni and Modi, the sons of Thor, in a post-Ragnarok, right after Ragnarok happens. And you've explained this book as the reason why you chose to do it post-Ragnarok was so that they could go about reclaiming a sense of self and exploring this world that's so different without Thor and Odin, and kind of seeing the sons of Thor come into their own. So I'm very curious, like, when you were starting, obviously we've talked about this, you're a big Thor fan, and you've also said that a big reason why you wanted to tell this story was to kind of give a little bit more love to some characters and maybe some plot lines that Marvel has neglected a little bit.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about when you're crafting this story, like, again, where did this real idea of centering it on Magni and Modi come from? Because I think, you know, there's a lot of characters to play with in Norse mythology, and you, we'll talk about this, but I got to tip my hat. You bring some really great ones into this that I would never have expected. Like, I was like, oh, that's a deep, deep cut. So again, why Magni and Modi? Why'd you choose this specific story when there's so much of Norse mythology to play with?
So, you know, I'm just impartial to Thor as an individual. That's my homie. I love Thor so much. You know, there's a lot to love with Thor. But as I've said plenty of times before, you know, there's a lot of stuff that Marvel just was not doing with the character. And I wanted to essentially, and now that I look back on it, it does kind of center about how my life was growing up to a degree. You know, I am the eldest of two children. So how Magni and Modi are kind of like how my brother and I are to a degree. You know, and I always thought, like, well, what happened if, say, I brought these two in for a story and then just removed all their, you know, supporting family and friends or anything like that, And I did do a lot of deep cuts because, you know, not a lot of these characters get a shine. Like, I've heard of maybe one other comic book series. And I'm pretty sure it was Michael Avon Oeming who told me this. I think he had a series that centered on Modi, crazy enough. And I'm looking for that book. I've been looking for it physically for a minute, and I haven't really found it, but I'm going to get it eventually. But I just wanted to be different. You know, there's plenty of stories with Thor. I could have done any other character in Norse mythology and gave them some shine, but I wanted it to be something different, something that nobody really does. I don't see too many like sibling stories. And granted, I guess you kind of get sibling stories a lot in Thor, but like not with, you know.
Yeah, very different.
Yeah, like Magni and Modi are like far different from one another. They literally have two separate mothers, same father. That's why they look so different. That's why Magni looks very much more like what his father would have been, you know, as a younger god. And Modi is the opposite. But, you know, it was just something unique. And I thought it would really shine out hard if I took it that way. You know, if you look at the poetic Eddas, or at least, you know, what they understand from it. Magni and Modi survive after Ragnarok. Like, it's them two and a handful of others. I think, like, maybe a dozen people technically survive. And it's like, all right, well, there's not much about what they do, so why can't I just do something like that? So I was like, all right, well, I'm going to take these two. I looked for a couple other figures from mythology that weren't really used or that I was aware of being used in anything, or, you know, who else could come about? Baldur, Skadi. There was a special character towards the end of the book that's brand new to mythology. It's my wife's character. But it's just, there's a lot of stuff that I could have done, and there's a lot of things that I will be doing that, you know, show a lot of love to, you know, Norse mythology in a way that has never been shown before. You know, you get some familiar faces along the way, obviously, I've got plans for. And then just to show their evolution, because by the time we hit, say, issue 30 or whatever I get to, like, these aren't going to be the same characters that you're introduced to with these first two books. So, and man, I really wish I could like divulge all the rest of the stuff, but we'll get there one day.
Yeah, we'll get there. And I just, I love that explanation of why you chose Magni and Modi. I think that that is so cool. And like you said, it's, they are two characters that are super underutilized with how much we have Thor content. So, I mean, I want to say, I know you're a big Thor guy as well as me, so maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. I want to say we get Magni in Jurgen's run, like very briefly for a little while, and then like that's it. Like, I don't think we've ever seen Magni or Modi again. I mean, maybe like here and there in like an issue or so.
Magni and Modi were in Thor about either in the 280s, like the late 280 issues. So 280 through 300, because around that era, I forget who the writer was. It wasn't Jerry Conway, I don't think, because his run was very underrated, because he did some Fire Lord stuff after or like way earlier or something like that. It was crazy. And I did talk to him about that years ago. Cool guy.
That's awesome.
But Magni and Modi, like, you see them very briefly with a very different version of Thor. And then they just, I don't remember what happened to them. It was something strange, like Ragnarok or happened, or like they fused together, kind of like how Odin and his brothers fused to be like Super Odin, basically, or whatever. But yeah, you don't get to see them very often. I know Magni was at least, or maybe Modi, were in Jurgen's run, because I love that run a lot. And not just because, was John Romita Jr. still on there? He was on there for a while.
Yeah, I think he was.
Because he was on there at least for 20 issues, because I remember all the Dissect, the Destroyer stuff, and like all that cool stuff. But yeah, you don't see them at all. And then now with the three granddaughters or whatever that we see future Thor have, but they don't ever say who their parents are. It's like, oh
yeah, not even a mention.
Like, man, y'all, they just hate their, you know, parentage. You're not going to say who their parents are, but you'll say he got grandkids that has had kids, but they don't say with who, when they were born, how many, you know, millennia gone by when they were born. Nothing.
Well, but that's why we need you to put in the put the pieces together, man, to make it.
I'm
all
trying.
But that I want to ask you too. So you kind of alluded to this already, but something I really loved about the book and these first two issues is the dynamic between Magni and Modi. And while I'm sure that we're going to get a lot more of that as we move forward, I'm very curious, how did you go about giving these kind of, I'm going to say iconic, not necessarily in the comic book realm, but I mean, these are real mythological characters. And so I'm curious, even in mythology, I feel like there's not, obviously we have a lot of Thor, but there's not as much about Magni and Modi. So how did you go about giving these two characters an actual personality that like readers could relate to and kind of jump on with? Because I think I feel like that would be a very daunting task, and like I wouldn't even know how to start approaching that.
So I looked at it this way. So when researching, you know, Thor's children, you know, he has three kids. I omitted the daughter for reasons I can't explain yet. In the future, I'll explain. But they all have traits of Thor and are kind of named, or rather, they're named somewhat as aspects of him. I forget how to go about that, but basically each one is more like him, just different. Like, they're solely that. And I was like, wow, that's actually pretty cool. So what if I match their personalities to it? So first, you know, I went into what they would look like. I'm like, all right, well, Magni clearly looks like his father. You know, Magni was a strong baby when he was born. He was kind of like Hercules, so to speak, at least the Disney version of how I remember that movie going. I did do deep dives on Hercules because I love Greek mythology just as much as I do Norse. And I'm like, all right, well, he's very much like his dad, you know. So we're just going to make sure he looks like his daddy and acts a certain way. Then there's Modi. Modi does not look like his father. If I'm correct, I think Norse mythology says that he had like blonde hair and some other traits. And I'm like, he was born to a dude who's a redhead. Although, you know, that could be hit or miss depending on who you ask. But I'm like, no, I don't want him to have red hair. What does his mother look like? So I looked it up. Mother was like a giant. I'm like, well, let's do something like traditional. I wanted him to look like what a actual Viking will look like, so to speak. He's kind of rough, brash. He's not very nice, clearly, as you saw at the beginning of the book. You know, and it's like I want their personalities to clash in a way that siblings would act. So I'm like, well, that's easy. I'm an older sibling. I'm kind of nice, I guess, compared to my brother, you know. But it's just like, how did we act when we were younger? And who acts very much more like each of our respective parents? I act very much like my father, and my brother don't understand it, and maybe one day he will, but he acts more so like my mother with like small tidbits of our father. Like, they have similar sensibilities, but my brother's pretty much like my mom. Just crazy tall. So I'm like, all right, well, that helps, you know, refine their personalities a bit. So I needed something else to stand out. So if Magni's very strong, he ain't gonna wear too much clothes. So, you know, I had him like shirtless with a cape at first and them cool leather pants and some open toe, you know, shoes, which I just kind of bullshit, and I ain't gonna lie. I wrote the descriptions for these two and then just passed them off to an artist that I connected with on Facebook, of all places, you know, some Facebook group. And he thought the idea was cool. We chatted it up for about a week. He was really down for it. So I was like, whatever comes to mind, just throw it out. And, you know, we'll probably go with that. So I think there was no revisions. either when it came to the artwork. And I'm like, no, that's perfect. He made it very Eurocentric, like I was hoping, because this is very much a European style book. If I could do it like in the massive format that they got over there, oh man, this book would be like 100 times better, in my opinion. Maybe one day I'll dabble with it, like a special one-off in that size. But like, you know, and I think their looks very much fit with their temperaments, how, you know, they act as characters on their own. You know, Magni's a little bit more compassionate than Modi is. Modi's just like, whatever. I'm going to get it done. You know, he's a magic user out the two of them. Magni relies on strength until he gets, you know, that cool little token of their father's love later on. But no, I just needed something that felt real, something that when you read it, you could kind of empathize with it, and you know that these are like actual people. Granted, they're long lived and, you know, very strong. That doesn't mean that they don't have emotions like the rest of us. So, you know, and I do act out back and forth. I'm kind of like the Seth MacFarlane with like voicing people on Family Guy, but I do with like Magni and Modi and all of them. So I thought it was a cool dynamic to have, and it worked. Clearly people like it.
Yeah, so. I loved it. And like I said, that's one of the things that really kind of stood out to me in the book is the relationship between these two felt very genuine, very real. And another thing that I really loved about the book that I thought was just very interesting, and again, you kind of just touched upon this, is so in the book, we see later on, we get kind of both brothers are faced with a test, and both brothers, very different tests. And for Magni, that is to be the warrior, if you would, of Asgard and wield Mjolnir. And then for Modi, it is to kind of take over the Allfather, Odin's role. And I think that that translates as well with their personality, how they look. You were just talking about, you know, designing the look for them. I would say I thought that Modi kind of looked a little bit Odin-like to me. And then when we got to, you know, that realization, I was like, okay, that totally makes sense. Yep. And so that kind of leads into one of my questions I had was, and you kind of touched on this already, but how did you decide to kind of split that role into two? Because we kind of just saw this actually in the most recent Donnie Cates run with Thor dealing with, you know, being Allfather, but also being the protector of Midgard and Asgard and all of that. And in this, you kind of take that theme and split it between the brothers, which I thought was just very creative. It was very cool the way you did it. So how did you kind of land on that theme of like, and like I said, you kind of touched on this already, that in mythology, I keep wanting to say daughters, sons of Thor, kind of portray a specific aspect of him. And so, like I said, I just thought that was super interesting.
So basically, like, all right, so the basis of splitting their roles, essentially, yes, it is very much built into their like temperaments as to who they are. But there was something I left out that was like imperatively key to how they operate as individuals going on through the series. In Norse mythology, they share Mjolnir. And like, it's kind of like how Captain America, both Sam and Steve, like if they were to throw the shield conjunction, you know, they one could throw it, other could catch it, kind of thing, after it's already struck who it needs to hit. That's kind of how they operated. They shared the hammer. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that. That's boring. Like, why would I want them to share this cool weapon when they both could do something immensely different? So I'm like, all right, well, there's only two ways this can go. Somebody's gonna have to be in Odin's place, and the other will have to do what Thor did. So figuring out who was going to do that was pretty clear. The one that looked the most like Thor was going to be the one that did what Thor did. But how he's going to have to cope with that, and like, I'm kind of mean. I treat Magni like dirt for a good long time. Like, maybe, oh man, if I said 30 issues, I might have to stretch it. Because I treat him so bad that by the time we meet him again, like in the future, like I skip a good amount of time. Oh man, he's rough. He done had a hard time, and just life did not treat him well.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see that probably towards it. Well, I'm not gonna say you'll see it, but you'll start to see where I'm going once we get through this first arc. But I just needed these two to fill roles that were already, you know, had people tasked to do them. So Odin is not here. So who's going to do his job? You can't just have two people doing his job, because then what's going to happen when somebody needs to leave? You're not both going to leave, because somebody mm-hmm. has to stay to protect, you know, Asgard or what's left of it. And then who's going to protect, you know, Earth and the realms adjacent? So Magni was obviously the one that had to do it. Modi was like, no, you have no choice. You are very much fit to do this. You know, Modi is like the critical thinker of the two. He makes all the hard decisions, where Magni wouldn't want to make those decisions, because he figure I can do both. I can, mm-hmm. you know, if it was a matter of a coin flip where you have to save your brother or you have to save 100 people, and you know, Modi clearly will save, say, let's just pretend he'll save his own brother, and then Magni's like, no, we gotta save 100 people. Magni will try to do both, try mm-hmm. to save both of them. It's like, nah, we're not gonna split, or have these two try to make these hard decisions together. I need them to do it separately. It makes for better dynamics. Somebody, I think Magni would have been piss poor at being an all father. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's like straight up, he likes to fight, but he fights with compassion to mm-hmm. a degree, and all sorts of other cool stuff. Modi already knows what he got to do. He's going through his little trials, which will be, you know, fun for him. But at the end, when we start to see hints of reformation, essentially, for Asgard, it's gonna be interesting to see where things go. But at the same time, like, somebody's gonna have to rule, and if nobody in Asgard will do it, someone somewhere else will do it. So it made for a fun dynamic, and it's just a lot of wildness.
Yeah, and I love that, and I just love the way, again, I just think it's super creative, the way that you're playing with the mythology and the history. And again, you've talked about how you want to make this closer to mythology than, like, say, the Marvel Thor books. And I think, again, you're just doing a really great job with that, and bringing these characters to life in a new way. I think, again, just very creative and very cool the way that you're playing with all these toys, which brings me to one of the kind of questions I had. And let me know if I can edit this out. So let me know if we can talk about this, because I don't want to spoil too much for people out there. But I'm going to butcher this name. Skull. Can we talk about that, or should we not talk about that?
So we got Skadi at the very end of one? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically we meet the three baddies of the book, or the, you know, this portion of the series. And, you know, it's Skadi, Balder, and my wife's character, whose name just escaped me at the moment for some reason. but basically they're back. Balder was long prophesied, because he was the first one to die. Mm-hmm. He kicked off Ragnarok with his death, but he is also one of the people that comes back after everybody else is gone. So I wanted to elaborate with how this went. So when we get to issue 2, which comes out next year, you'll see why Balder came back, how and why Skadi and her wife showed up with him, because everybody has their own, you know, modus operandi and all that, and why they do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Balder clearly wants something, and he don't look in too good a shape at all.
And my man is not looking good at all.
Well, that's what happens. You die and it mess you up, especially, when you're supposed to be long lived. It messes you up. But which is a fun little hint for something next year. But no, I wanted to use different characters, and she actually was a goddess of the hunt. Skadi is a goddess of the hunt in Norse
Yeah, so that was
mythology.
my question is, so why I'll let you say it. I don't want to spoil too much for everybody, but the decision you made with her character in the book as opposed to, who she is in mythology, I thought was like, again, so creative, and I was just like, oh shit, dude, like what? I loved that. I thought it was so cool. So with her character specifically, can you talk like why did you decide to do that? Like, where did that come from? I just again thought that was like so cool.
So, I try to, keep things heavily steeped in the mythology, and I'm like, well, I looked at, people who are related, and I'm like, all right, well, we got this section, Magni, Modi, Thor, Thrud, which is the daughter. They're all related. They have all their, parents, their separate mothers and all that crazy stuff. And I'm like, well, what about the extended family? Like, we know about Balder, we know about Tyr, plenty of other relatives. Let's go further. What about the primordial people? Because what folks don't understand is that Odin is technically, if I'm correct, descended from Ymir, the primordial frost giant. Like, he is the progenitor of all of them, essentially. Well, people don't understand that Odin killed him. Well, no, it was Bor that killed Ymir, and then Odin did his thing, because all of them and giants is kind of messed up, in my opinion. The mythology is rough. Thor's an asshole.
Dude,
But I'm like, wow,
yes.
I needed to do something, and I saw her. I'm like, well, technically speaking, like, there's nothing saying that she ain't related. And technically, if you look at it, she kind of is related, this, in her own way. So why not push the relation further? I ain't gonna, spoil too much for people that ain't read it yet, even though I don't mind. Like, my book's been out there for a good portion of the year, and a lot of people have read it. You can join in the fun. But no, I wanted to do something. I love, like, family aspects and, like, people not knowing about relatives, and, like, a certain someone likes to keep secrets, and that's across all media. It don't matter what form he take. A man sucks at telling people. And it's kind of reminiscent of, like, I don't think I realized it at the time, but it happened to me to a degree. Like, I found out I got relatives I didn't even know about until, like, I had two grandfathers die 4 years back to back, which sucked for me. But I found out I had two uncles I didn't know about on both sides. So my father had a brother that which coincidentally lived down the street from my mom, and I walked past his house all the time. Didn't know who he was until I saw him hold my grandfather's casket. I'm like, huh? Who is this? And then my grandpa, my mother's father, same thing. A strange man that suspiciously looks kind of like my grandfather, come from, I think he lives in Canada or something like that. He's a popular DJ there that does reggae. But I'm like, I ain't never seen this man. He had dreadlocks to the floor. And I'm like, he used it as a scarf. It's the dead of winter right before Christmas. And I'm like, who are you?
Who
Oh.
is this guy?
And then, like, it's crazy. I used to think, because my grandfather used to make jokes like, oh yeah, I got two other grandkids in Canada with my other son. I'm like, you ain't got no other kids. What you talking about? And then the son comes to his funeral. And I'm like, man, what is this? So I'm like, what fun it would be to kind of, like, piss characters off that you're writing to have, like, secret family just show up out of nowhere and really, piss you off, or rather, put their foot on your neck
I would
looking for
say, yeah,
stuff.
a little bit more than piss you off, but yeah, like I said, I just thought that was so creative and so cool the way I won't spoil it for people at home to go, read it for themselves. But in actual mythology, and again, you're the expert here more than me, but Skadi if I'm saying that right. These names are so hard to say. But she was actually a wife of Odin at one point.
Yep.
So again, the kind of flip that you did in this story, and again talking about the deep cuts, it's like, bruh, that's a deep cut. Like, you don't know who that is unless you've done some reading. So
I do a lot of reading.
Yeah, so again, I loved the villains that you've crafted, at least for this first little arc, this little trio that you got going on. Again, super creative and interesting. I thought the way that you laid out the book was really awesome. And again, with the dynamic of the brothers really being the theme that, pulls everything together. I loved it. I know I've said this multiple times in the interview, but I really, really enjoyed it. So tell me, so you talked about issue 2's coming next year. So do we have a current Kickstarter going for Magni the Mighty, or how can people get this? How can people read it? Where can they find it?
So we ain't launching until the fall of 2024. So we're still a long ways out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to keep up to date with, information for when that Kickstarter drops and whatnot, I have a newsletter everybody can subscribe to. It's called the Epic Fantasy Substack. Basically, from there, I pretty much drop everything I'm doing. Sometimes I put teasers, which you'll probably see a Magni teaser probably in the next 6 or so months. I got a lot of projects coming, so that's sure to be one of them. Also, if you really want to know about when that link drops, if I don't drop it beforehand, Band of Bards, the publisher that I work with to publish Magni the Mighty, they have their own newsletter. You can sign up on their website, or I believe it's in their bio on Twitter. Same with my Substack, it's in my Twitter bio in a link. We both will be talking about this project closer in time when we get that pre-launch link up. So, and I encourage everybody to, sign up when one of our, newsletters come up, because this is going to be a great book. I go very deep into why things at the end of issue 1 happened, all the motivation and what that really means for Magni. Also, like I said earlier on, I treat Magni like garbage. So he's going to get lumped up pretty bad.
Well, you gotta put your favorite characters through the worst things so that they can have the best, not necessarily comeback, but that's where good character arcs come from. You can't have something interesting happen to someone that, like, everything just works out for all the time. That's why Spider-Man gets his ass kicked all the time. Like, you can't have Spider-Man be happy, because then he's not interesting anymore.
Oh, no. And that's why I treat Magni so bad, because I'm like, if it's 50 issues, just straight up brutality on this boy, I treat Magni like he was in Mortal Kombat. Like, it's bad for him.
And it just makes the victory that much sweeter, though, when it does come. And also so much more deserved as well. I think that
most definitely.
I think that's a kind of criticism that you can see in a lot of different books, is that someone just comes through and just whoops ass for no reason, right? Which, like, we all love to see it, but when it's earned and justified, it's just so much more impactful. And again, just so much us, just mwah, chef's kiss. But
definitely.
I mean, my man, Devin, I could talk to you. I wish we could spend all day talking about this book and more about mythology and stuff, because we could go all day long. But unfortunately, you got a lot of stuff to do. You're working on all these books, all this incredible work you got going on. So I want to push it off to you for a second. What else are you working on? What do we got coming soon? What's coming down the pipeline? Tell the people what's coming, and also where they can find you online so they can keep up with all this great stuff.
Most definitely. I'm working on a slew of great projects, one of which, like, I'm ultra proud of. It's not necessarily Magni the Mighty, but we go on the Greek end of the spectrum this time around. I think I spoiled it on another podcast I did like a couple weeks ago, so I might as well just drop it now. My next book is called The Lion of Olympus. It's a book about Hercules, but I spell it the Roman way, so Heracles, however you want to say it. But basically, this is going to be a 2-issue, limited. It's titled The Wrath of Hera, if that gives anything away. And
okay.
She ain't happy. She's a very bitter woman. That's going to hopefully come, I want to say, around March or April, I'm going to say. I'm about halfway done with all the artwork. I know with the holidays coming up, I had to put a pause on it, which, it'll be all right. But no, we should have that pre-launch link hopefully up around maybe February at the latest. But on top of that, I got a sci-fi book I'm working on that's super hush-hush for right now. Magnus number 4 with Wiseacre is up right now. I think we got like 12 days left, maybe 11 days left. I'd love for people to see that issue. A lot of big reveals. Man, there's so much going on in that book. I love it. I wrote 16 issues and some change of that series in 2 months.
Oh, wow.
It was ridiculous. Let's see. What else do I have? I have a Western coming out next year.
Ooh, okay.
Trying to figure out how I'm going to release it. Yeah, Black and White. Oh, man, it's a gorgeous book. I'm hoping to start teasing that a little bit more after beginning of the year, trying to figure out how I want to release it. I know I did a poll recently about like kickstarting it as a digital only, and if people like it enough from what they see on the Kickstarter and overfund it, I'll just drop most of the chapters then and there and then collect it up into physical either later in the next year or within, like, I don't know, a year after, so 2025, I would say, a physical compilation will come out. Because it's going to at least be 100 or so pages.
Oh, wow.
Western goodness.
Woo, baby, I can't wait for that. That sounds awesome.
I'm going to send you a couple screenshots, unlettered pages.
Ooh, so okay, let's go. Peek. Oh, sneak peek. Sons of Mjolnir exclusive, people.
Let's see. Obviously, Magnet and Mighty number 2 comes out next year. I'm trying to, if we get enough hype, I'm going to try to get them to let us drop number 3 as like high stretch goal.
Let's go, people. We got to get there. Let's go, everybody. Let's go. Let's go fund it. Come on. Let's go. I want it.
Yep. So, there's so much coming out. And if you all want to follow me, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at CBDevin95. Literally, I post more on Twitter or X, as people call it, than I do Instagram. I'm very Instagram illiterate.
Yeah, I'm not you good and me at both.
I post at least twice a month on my Substack, which, like I said, you can find on my Twitter bio and a link. I have a link tree up on there where you can see that and anything I've ever worked on. I have my portfolio on there as well. So that way you don't miss nothing. I drop a free book every month, or rather not a free book, but rather a free story. There you go. Free comic story every month. I know I missed November because I was so busy and it wouldn't have happened in the time frame I needed it. We're about to get lit. It's going to be great next year. At least 4 main books for me. Man, a lot of money. A lot of money.
Let's get it. Let's get it. The Devin train is moving full steam ahead. I absolutely love it. Everyone that is watching or listening to this, please, please, please go follow my dude. Keep up with all the stuff he's got going on. Go back Magnus. When Magni comes out on Kickstarter, please go back that. We will be singing its praise, so don't worry. If you're following along on this channel, we will keep you updated on when that's coming. And I am also going to be putting all of the links to everything Devin's talking about here down in the description here. So you don't got to go anywhere else. Just go down there. You'll find his link tree, his Twitter page, everything you could ever wonder about or that we've talked about here will be down there. My man, Devin, I cannot thank you enough for coming and talking to me today about this book and about your career. It's been so interesting. And again, I really, it's killing me. I wish we could stay longer and talk more. We didn't even get to talk about Thor and stuff. And which just means we got to get you back. That just means you got to come back on and we got to get back into it, because like I said, I could talk to you forever. But again, thanks so much for coming and sharing this book with us. I really love it. Again, people, go and back this work. But Devin, is there anything else that you have for the people at home before we get out of here?
If you're not reading Immortal Thor, please go buy that book. Like,
yes.
People don't understand how masterfully crafted that book is. And like, it makes me want to cry. Also, pick up Magneto Mighty today, or when you hear this, or watch this. Then go read Immortal Thor. There are a lot of things that Al is doing that I'm kind of doing something similar. I'm kind of mad because I thought he read my book and ripped me off a little
bit. You're like, God damn it, okay. Al, what the hell?
So I might have to actually go change a couple things in my, you know, master document for where the series is going, because we're doing a lot of similar things. I don't want to take away from what he's building. Granted, you know, he's got a lot more mythology going for Thor. But Immortal Thor, great series. Please go buy that book. Support it like no other. I literally, oh man, I think I get like two issues or two copies a month. I buy one, my dad buys me.
Same. I so, got one to stock, one to rock, my man. You got to get two.
Oh, most definitely.
But I cannot echo you enough on the Immortal Thor stuff. I mean, I guess this is a perfect time, and you're the perfect guest to say this while we're talking about Immortal Thor. We're actually going to be having Martin Kokola back on the show. He's going to be coming on later this month. So we're going to be talking all about the most recent it's going to be Immortal Thor 5 is going to be what we're talking about with the Thor corpse, baby. My immortal corpse, sound off in the comments if you're reading. If you guys enjoyed this episode, enjoyed watching it and listening, please consider giving us a like and subscribe. Also, I got to say, before we get out of here real quick, we are doing a Christmas fundraiser called Comics for a Clause that is going to be donating books to the Children's Hospital here in Los Angeles. If you are able and would like to support that, please consider giving us checking us out in the description below. All those links will be there as well. Other than that, though, we got to get out of here. Devin's got to go write some more amazing books. Yep. So I hope that you all have a fantastic day. I hope you stay hydrated. Your stacks are fat, and we will see you all next time.
I can do this all day.